You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Like the dude just said, yes, this show is solid, conservative, and just plain right. Saving the world, folks, one soundbite at a time. About to go to the phones now, or actually online with my buddy Jeff Poor. I got to say this, though, first, before Jeff comes on. I just got a breaking story here. Somebody just sent me while I was waiting to come on the air. In the Alabama Congressional District 5 race, the runoff between Dale Strong and Casey Wardinski, apparently Dale Strong has just agreed to a televised debate on Channel 19 News WHNT on June 16th, 5 days before the GOP runoff. Casey Wardinski has already said, he's responded to say, I am ready and willing to debate Dale Strong anytime, any place. So it looks like we may have a televised debate for Congress between Dale Strong, Casey Wardinski. In the meantime, though, a guy whose opinion matters, Jeff Poor. He's with FM Talk 106.5 down on the coastal region of our state. He's also the political editor for 1819 News and an editor for Breitbart, is on the line. Jeff Poor, how you doing, bud?
Doing well, Phil. How are you?
I'm good, brother. I was just asking you during the break a minute ago about the election night hangover. I know it's not an alcohol hangover. It's just like almost like a catch-your-breath hangover.
It was almost like an all-nighter for me. I got off the air at 11. We stayed on till 11 down here. And then kind of put together a few pieces for the morning run. And next thing you know, it's 3 a.m. And you got to get up and do radio at 9, so I'm up at like 7:30 getting ready for radio. Oh, I had to do Dale's show at 7:30, so I actually was up at 7 this morning. But that's part of the business. This is where you come to play.
That's what you do. Did you make any sense at all at 9?
No, I was fine. I mean, it was just kind of like, you know, well, here's what happened, guys. And I'll say this, Senator, I was wrong. I mean, I thought the Mo Brooks surge was a lot more real, and it was, but in the historical norms under other situations, Mo Brooks underpolls, he overpolled, or at least the Katie Britt underpolled, and that I think surprised a lot of us.
Yeah, I think it did. I think it was the Britt underpolling along the way, because she was in the 40s when the results came back in. I think the last poll I saw had Brooks somewhere around 30, and he finished with 29 point something. So not too far off that mark, but you got to admit, though, it was a surge, brother, when he was down at 16 just like, what, a month ago, and then all of a sudden he's back as number two in the runoff?
No, it was pretty admirable what they did there, and you know, a lot of that was because of Mike Durant's kind of, you know, he just deteriorated there at the end. But I got a couple of theories here. I think Katie did a lot better in the rural areas than people had anticipated. Hmm. That seems like a place where Mo Brooks really might do well. And then you go look at the map. She owned the Wiregrass. She owned our part of the state. But you also look at the Coleman, look at like Claiborne County, look at these counties that are kind of just on the edge of suburbia. She did well. But the second thing, and I think this is what is really important, I think she's the beneficiary of Democrat crossover votes. So think about this, Senator. When you have one of these surveys and you look at it, you look at the questionnaire, the first thing they ask you is, are you a Republican or a Democrat? And they're trying to categorize you as a likely Republican voter. If you say you're a Democrat, well, they either hang up the phone or they give you a separate questionnaire. So these Democrats that were likely Republican voters did not show up in the polls. Huh. And I think that at least 5% of that number broke. 5% of Katie Britt's number was Democrats crossing over to vote for her in a Republican primary.
Well, I mean, I had one caller who pretty much said that. I tell you, the one where I'm eating crow is I really thought Ivy was going to be in a runoff. I did not think she had the ability to get to 51%, and she got to 54.5 or something like that.
Just look at that, though. The type of voter that votes for Governor Ivy is probably the same kind of voter that's going to vote for Katie Britt. And the polling just did not pick that up. I think there's something there. I think there's a correlation there. And both, it's no coincidence that both Katie Britt and Kay Ivy underpolled in this election. They just did not get it right.
So not having Ivy on the ballot for the runoff election, does that help or hurt Britt, in your opinion?
It probably hurts Britt a little, because that's the same kind of voter. And that, you know, having Kay Ivey to vote for over a Tim James or Lindy Blanchard would be an extra incentive for your Chamber of Commerce, your business community, you know, banking community type of Republican, farm alpha type of Republican, to get up and go vote. So it might hurt her on the margins.
All right, well, so let me go to Congressional District 5. So I just announced right as I was about to bring you on the air that Dale Strong, Casey Wardinsky look like they may be doing a televised debate. And so our compadre, Dale Jackson, who joins us on the Grand Council every Thursday, he opined, I think this morning, that the fact that we have a congressional district runoff in Mo Brooks's home area may add strength to his ability in the runoff, because he's already strong in North Alabama anyway. Does it drive more voters to the polls? Your thoughts?
It may. It just depends on the Durant voters break. But I tell you, Senator, I think Katie Britt's very strong in North Alabama. I mean, the whole 5th Congressional District did not go for Mo Brooks. Lauderdale, Jackson County looked like they went for Katie Britt. So I think that's the first thing you got to point out. But the places where Mo Brooks has always done well, whenever he's run statewide, that's 2017, that's 2006, it's Madison County, Morgan County, and Limestone County. But Britt gave him a hell of a run in those counties. So, I don't know if it would be under any other circumstance. It may be a big advantage, but in this case, the advantage is not quite as large as it would be.
Well, okay. And, you know, I think, too, Katie Britt, in that regard, in North Alabama, she's the beneficiary of the fact that, I mean, I think the voters who vote for Katie Britt are the ones that believe that a politician's job is to bring home the bacon. The ones who voted for Mo Brooks are the ones who tend to believe in statesmanship and good governance. Not that she's a bad governance person, but what I'm saying is he's all about fiscal discipline and balance the budgets, whereas she's worked for Shelby. Shelby's been bringing home the bacon to the Huntsville area for quite a while. I'm not going to be a bit surprised if she doesn't have the coattails of that.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, Huntsville's turned into a federal town, right, with the arsenal, oh, yeah, defense contractors, NASA. And, I mean, it's the same kind of phenomenon that goes on in D.C. and, well, Northern Virginia, probably a better representation there, where you still have your conservative ideals, but it's kind of better, what's for better for me for the kitchen table, and that's going to be a Katie Britt in the U.S. Senate.
Okay, so let me ask you, as you look around the state, anywhere in the state, any surprises, things that caught you off guard, or you said, dang, didn't see that coming?
A few. Probably the biggest one, I would say, and we were talking about it off air, Whatley, 4 votes. Yeah. I mean, that one could go either way. He ran against the city councilman, Jay Hovey, down in Auburn. Whatley's always hanging on for dear life in that state Senate district, and he always outraces his competition like a million to one. So he had $1.2 million, and his opponent had $94,000, and he still lost to him by 4 votes as we stand here today. That was a big one. A bunch of House seats. But I'll tell you one that was kind of big and a mild upset. People expected Mike Jones down in Andalusia.
Yes.
Just to waltz to that Senate seat. So Jimmy Hawley, been in the Senate forever from Elba, is finally retiring. And Mike Jones from Andalusia, he's a Rules Committee chairman in the House, has a lot of power in the House, probably more power in the House than he would as a state senator, but chose to leave that post, and he got beat. He got beat by a guy named Josh Carley, who I'm kept trying to catch up to learn more about. Carley got just over 50% of the vote, so it's not even going to go to a runoff. There were 3 candidates. And one got 10%, and Jones got 40-something percent, and Carley got just over 50%. So that was kind of a shock, too. And one more probably up in y'all's listening area that shocked me a little bit was Prancy losing by as much as he did in House District 7. And I really thought, Senator, that Prancy was going to do well because he was the guy kind of back in the constitutional carry as we know it today. I had another guy down here, Shane Stringer, in my neck of the woods. And they got that through, and I thought that was just going to give him just what he needed to get over the finish line. And sure enough, it wasn't. I mean, and 9 points is a significant loss for an incumbent.
You know what it was? It was the Gilligan's Island commercial. That's what it was. It was a Gilligan's Island commercial. Dismantled him at the very end.
Everybody's copying Gerald Dial these days with Dial Time, right?
Oh, God, yeah. One more, too, that's kind of interesting, too. Over in, State Senator Del Marsh, a longtime pro tem of the state Senate, a figure in Alabama politics, one of the architects of the 2010 sweep in the legislature. He's retiring, and so there's a runoff in that seat. Wendy Gee Draper, I'm not sure how much money she spent, but, Lord, she was all over the TVs in North Alabama. And Keith Kelly, who is just a solid, you know, very unassuming but very solid guy, is taking her to a runoff. And so that's going to be, you know, for the former pro tem seat, it's an undecided open seat right now. And looking at a runoff there with Wendy Draper and Keith Kelly.
Yeah, and everybody told me Draper wasn't not going to be a threat, that it was Keith Kelly all the way, because I really looked into that race and talked to a lot of people about it over there in Anniston. And they said, no, Draper, she's not a serious candidate, even though she's got a bunch of money. But sure enough, when the votes were tallied, she showed up pretty serious on primary day.
Well, I think overall, the interesting thing, though, when I kind of summed it up, and I'm not sure which article it was that I read this in, because I've got a stack in front of me, is that how many, I mean, in the Alabama State Senate, there's only 35 members. Five chose not to run again. Seven of those who remained picked up challengers. Five of those were Republicans, obviously, because there's a majority Republican. But it's just crazy to watch. I mean, not every one of them, you know, prevailed.
One of the House seats, and you could speak on this. I'm interested to hear what you got to say. The Isbell Butler race, four points. That one was tight. And I think you were the one to tell me. You watch Mac Butler. He's going to outwork Gil Isbell, and he's going to show up. And sure enough, here it is. That one was close.
It was close. I mean, it's a 4-point spread when you get down to it, but it was still close, 52-48. Mac had more name ID because the district lines favored him when they redrew it, I think. But also, I think there was a great deal that Mac could work with because Gil Isbell had been, you know, one of the voters for the gas tax. He had supported the occupational tax. He had supported alcohol delivery, and he owns an alcohol store. And just lots of things that – and then it got really ugly, too. They were doing a Facebook battle between each other, slinging mud left and right. I'm not going to be a bit surprised if there wasn't a write-in candidate based on the way those guys were going after each other. But in the end, Mac Butler was the more conservative candidate, and I think that's what won out.
Yeah, and that's what it sounded like to me. But you know, Butler, even though he got beat by Andrew Jones in that Senate race, he's always strong in Gadsden, and that was always true in that Senate race.
Yeah. Well, brother, we're up against it, but I appreciate your time, and get some good sleep tonight.
Hey, appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
All right, guys. Copper, move us to a break. That was Jeff Poor, the FM Talk 106.5. He has a talk show, the Jeff Poor Show, down in Mobile. He's also the political editor for 1819 News and an editor for Breitbart. We got good stuff on this show, man. All right, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. More of this when we get back. Hang on.